What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.
Hey, everyone. It's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
You're in the madhouse now.
This episode is brought to you by Libsyn. Planning to start a podcast? Look no further than Libsyn. Libsyn is one of the biggest feature-rich podcast hosting platforms in the world. Libsyn is IAB certified, offers many hosting plans, and you can start for as low as $5 a month. Aspiring podcasters who listen to the show radio can get 1 month free by using the promo code TSR. Use promo code TSR at checkout to get 1 month free.
And this is your source for tech, gaming, and entertainment news this week. We're going to be talking about the Xbox Partner Preview. Definitely tributes to Dragon Ball creator, some Xbox news, Rooster Teeth, Titanfall game, maybe Titanfall 3, maybe a mixed bag of sorts, and some other things in this particular episode as well. Daniela, how are you feeling today?
Good. Glad that we got to watch the Xbox preview together.
I want to do more of that. I thought that was really cool. You know, it's just a good vibe. Top of the show, Xbox Partner Preview, there were a lot of cool titles there, which I was surprised, you know, for me personally. Definitely talk about what you took away from that particular show.
Well, overall, it was just clean and simple. Pretty much showed you game trailers, a little bit of gameplay, and then, like, if you want to go and check it out, go check out the Xbox Wire for interviews, further deep dives into that. They just gave you the wrong game. But then it's also a nice segue for them to get traffic, you know, to their own sites, to their own platforms for you on what you're interested in. Because I think sometimes, like, yeah, that's cool, but you're not interested in it. But sometimes they throw in, like, this 10-15 minute interview, and you end up, for people who are not interested, they end up like, okay, where does this end? Where's the timestamp to get me ahead to the next game?
For
this
sure.
One, I kind of like this format.
I do. I really do like this format. Go ahead.
But yeah, there were some good titles in there. They had a pretty much strong listing of games. So one of them I actually kind of forgot about then. And then it was Altered. I can't remember when they originally announced that one, but it seemed interesting, but I forgot. Like, I meant to, like, keep it on tabs on it, but I didn't. And it was really nice to see that and see that, you know, more of the story and to remind me. And I'm sure there's a lot of gamers like that. Like, they'll do a teaser trailer or announcement like 2 years ago, but you don't hear much more about it. And then here we are again, coming back with that. But what did you think about it?
Yeah, so with the Alters, I thought that was interesting. We saw that really recently. It wasn't that long ago where they showed, you know, that particular thing. But to me now, watching it during the Xbox Partner Preview, it made more sense of what the story was about, you know, prior, you know. But before, it was just like, okay, there was this big circle wheel and there's stuff happening in the circle wheel. It's a house is where you're going to be, you know, stationed at. But now, as I watched it, as we were watching, I was like, hey, this looks like a Death Stranding inspired game. Even when they're walking around on the planet, I felt like it was Death Strandy a little bit, right? And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because, you know, even when you look at a game like, you know, The Sinking City, you know, that gave me a vibe of Alan Wake a little bit, right? So as much as we want to say, you know, games are new, games are totally independent from, you know, other things, we can see so many different inspirations of the games that we see, you know. So I thought that was really interesting. But of course, there's other titles that we saw there that was pretty fun too. So those are some quick thoughts there.
I think the biggest thing about the Alters is the way that it is telling the story. I think it's definitely, you see more how and why you have these clones of yourselves, which is an interesting tagline, the Alters all by myself. You know, it's always interesting even to self-reflect personally about if I made different choices in my life at these pivotal moments, how would I be a different person? Like, what type of person would I be? And then to experience that, and he's like pretty much cloning him and changing it and looking at it. So I think the way that storytelling and how that's going to be playing into it is definitely very unique and very interesting. Although I totally see the whole Death Stranding, because he's roaming this planet by himself. Doing what? I'm not quite sure. Obviously, he has to go get this material to create these clones of himself, but that's the only part of the story that I don't understand. It's like, okay, so why were you sent here exactly? Like, what is your mission to gather?
To do what?
Yeah. So I think it's going to more heavily rely on this circle housing structure that he's living in than anything else.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting because so I'm watching this planet, and I'm seeing that with, of course, you know, Death Stranding has changed so many different things. And now we're talking about Hideo Kojima recently, especially with a documentary that we saw. You know, so many games are being inspired by things that we've seen in the past, and it's always been that way. And I think that we just have to realize that we're going to see glimpse of those things in other games. And I'm looking at, you know, this particular title. The thing that really interesting, that's really interesting for me, is how you're going to be dealing with the personalities of your past selves, right? I think that part is really, you know, captivating for me. And it's, of course, I'm very specific about the games that I play. So I really want to see how people are going to make the decisions when they're playing, you know, this particular title. So it was fascinating. I really enjoyed, you know, that. Some things were forgettable, unfortunately. I think that's just the nature of watching a lot of these things. But a lot of things, you know, really left a stamp. Persona, for sure. Final Fantasy. I mean, you can go down the list. It's really cool. So I don't want to jump ahead, but go ahead. Any thoughts?
No, that's it for Alters. Other games I thought looked really cool. So they opened it up with actually, I believe it was Unknown 9 Awakening. The gameplay mechanics in that looked really, really interesting and very intriguing. It was very fast-paced. It took me a little bit to catch on to what you're doing. But the way that you're... It kind of just seems like you are strategically taking over, you know, different NPCs that you're going to come across and using their abilities to attack each other, and then having this, like, chain of events that kind of happens there. I thought that looked really cool. It was very fast-paced. I'm not complaining about that. I just thought it was like, I don't know. It was just really cool.
it was really cool. I like, it wasn't like a time. It wasn't like a, you know how some games have the button timing thing. It wasn't necessarily that, but it kind of felt like, you know, you're making sure that as you survey, you know, the particular section that you show up in, that you're going to decide what's going to be the best demise for the particular characters on the screen. And I thought that was really good, just experiencing that. The graphics are absolutely incredible, right? You know, top notch. And yeah, that title is really, really dope, for sure.
What else caught your attention with the game?
So Creatures of Ava, you have any thoughts? I know you want to talk about that one.
You start off with it.
I think it's cool. I mean, you know, Pal World kind of vibe, you know? And that's it. I think it's colorful. I don't have anything bad to say about it. So I'll hand it to you.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt about it too. Nothing bad to say about it. Very beautiful character designs. Very colorful. I did get the Pal World, like the non-violent version of Pal World. It didn't seem like you're sending out your buddies to go and attack or kind of like build up this stuff. But it got that sense on top of it being kind of like a Pokemon Snap. So it kind of like it's nice. I'm not saying that those are copycats of it, but it's simply inspired by, you know, Pokemon, and Power World. That's kind of the vibe that it was giving off, which is so interesting because, you know, you're putting this out. None of those characters that they showed, the little creatures, seem like they were inspired by Pokemon or Power right. World. But then I can also kind of say that about Power World too. But yet they got so much flack for it, not from the gaming community, but just, you know, copyright thing. So like, how is this going to play out for Creatures of is it Ava or Ava? I can't remember what it was, but I don't know. It was fun. It was
like I'll say Ava.
I would say Ava too.
Yeah. No, it was really cool. Really colorful games. One that I'm definitely not, we can go in order. The one that I'm definitely not playing is the Roblox Griefville / Chucky. I'm not playing that. The music was eerie. Go ahead.
I didn't come across as like eerie. Like, it's cool. I like Chucky. I'm a kid of like the 80s and 90s, and I'm a horror fan. But like, I saw like the good guy doll like box. I'm like, oh, that's cool. What is this? And then like, they started showing gameplay. I'm like, this is something Roblox, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sure enough, there pops up. I'm like, I'm not anti Roblox, but I was kind of really hoping for something that's really like its own standalone, that's not really built on another platform. But Roblox has such a huge community and such a huge player base, it kind of just makes sense. Very interesting how they got the rights to have Chucky. But I just wasn't feeling the gameplay about it at all. Like, I don't know.
How did you know it was Roblox? Because I'm not familiar with that sandbox engine or... Okay.
Just the way that it looked, like the little, you know, the players and everything like that. Like, instantly I got Roblox vibes, and sure enough. It's just like, you can tell a lot of the stuff that's built within Roblox, they kind of have a similar look. And I'm saying all of them, but some, like a good majority of them, you can tell straight off the bat, like, okay, this is the base design of Roblox characters that you're just putting skins and all these textures on top of. And I'm not anti Roblox. I just really would love to have Chucky have its own little thing, kind of like Jason did. Hopefully it's a little bit more successful. I haven't been keeping up with the Dead by Daylight stuff, but Chucky in there would be cool. Maybe it already did. I'm not even sure anymore. I gotta go double check. But possessed dolls are kind of cool in my thing. It's just not in Roblox.
I don't know. I was like, I know I'm not playing this. I said, I know I'm not playing this. But it was
fast paced for a good horror Chucky game. At least for me.
Do you think we'll see one in the future?
Oh, I hope so. I think so. I think there's a possibility of that. I mean, we have so many horror fans, and people love a good scare. I wouldn't be opposed to it. Now, yeah, I would be opposed to it if it's first person. If it is a first person, Chucky, that's what breaks my heart, was when things go first person and I can't play it. Which, thankfully, a majority of these games were not first person. Only one of them was, and it's the only one I couldn't actually watch. It was actually a pretty good announcement, but I'm jumping ahead of this list.
No, you're good. You're good. So Roblox, yeah, I'm not Roblox. Griefville, you know, cross Chucky, you know, definitely not something I'm going to experience. But if you are, then, you know, you guys enjoy that for sure. The Sinking City 2, that was really dope. Extremely dope.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know you're not going to play that one either. See, that one had good horror vibes.
It did.
All through it. I didn't get to play The Sinking City 1, the first one. So that's my bad. But yeah, overall, that one looked like a good thriller horror game to get into. I like the way that they kind of showcased it. Obviously, I don't think any of that is in gameplay footage. Cinematics probably, but not in gameplay.
No, it was really dope. So my thing is, like, watching titles like that, I was like, this really reminds me of like Alan Wake. It gave me Alan Wake vibes, you know. And then you have him, you know, behind the tree. You know, the monster comes out, and I was like, okay, cool. Then you had a part where he was in the building with the flashlight, right?
Yeah. It looked more like the bus thing with the guy in the straitjacket that looked like a...
And then you had... there were hands on like... I don't know. I was like, nope. Not doing it. But in terms of the way it looks, absolutely amazing. So definitely something we're checking out. The Sinking City 2. Did they say 2025, I think so,
yeah.
I think that was the date on it, 2025. Final Fantasy, you know, that looks amazing. Now, I'm wondering, is that Final Fantasy also available for PC? Because I don't recall seeing a PC tag, you know, for...
Oh, okay. This thing. So that is Final Fantasy 14, the MMO. That thing has been on PC and PlayStation for, I want to say,
okay,
a decade.
Okay.
So So that they have a lot of expansion on that. I don't know why it took so long for it to come to Xbox, but hopefully they have a whole spanning out, because I believe, oh man, I might be getting my timeline wrong on there, but I'm pretty sure it came out on PC first. I believe it was on available day one on PlayStation 4 when it released. The PlayStation 4, not Final Fantasy 14. So the 14 has been out for a very, very long time.
Okay.
And it's only just coming to Xbox now, which is March 21st. And I think they have like a new player coming in. So there's a lot of stuff that you can claim between March 21st and I believe it was April 19th. And a lot of story. I wish I had to take a break and end my subscription for Final Fantasy 14. I started off playing it on my PS4, and then I picked it up for PC, and I've stuck on PC. But with an online MMO, you have to have so much time. I don't. And like there, I played it almost like every day for a few years, and then like life happened, and I was like, I'm gonna get back to it.
Right.
Yeah, and then like 2 years passed of me paying my subscription. I'm like, okay, now I'm just throwing money away. Mm. I need to take a break from this. But it's really cool that it's finally coming to Xbox. So the players from the Xbox that are going to be joining in, they have a lot of content that they can play through, that they can experience, that they're going to fall in love with. There's nothing bad I can possibly say about Final Fantasy 14. At all. It is an MMO, a long-standing MMO that I would prefer. Like, I never got into WoW. I couldn't, like, it just wasn't for me. But Final Fantasy 14 definitely was my style. And on console, because it was on PlayStation for so long, it just, the controls make sense for it too. Like, I played it both with controller and both mouse and keyboard, and it just feels right. It feels natural. It doesn't feel too clunky playing it on controller. And I know a lot of PlayStation players that play the game that just stuck with controller even when they came over to playing it on PC. So just having it move over to Xbox, I don't think that's going to be a weird transition. People are going to get used to that pretty quickly. I don't think you're missing out too much if you're not playing on keyboard and mouse. So, like, that's the biggest thing I can say. I mean, I don't know why it took so long for it to finally come to Xbox, but you know, it's a good time that it did. It's just a new revival of new players and bringing a little bit more life back to it. Not that it ever went away, but there's so many expansions.
Yeah. So do you think it's going to be embraced, you know, when it comes to the Xbox platform, since it's been on the other platforms for so long?
Yeah, you think they're looking forward to it? Okay. I think so. I don't see why it wouldn't be. I mean, granted, like, JRPGs are, you know, their type of niche there. But then when you have it as an MMORPG, like, look how well that Final Fantasy VII is, like, huge in popularity. Yeah, that's not an MMO, but it falls within the Final Fantasy realm of things. And people just love it, and it's just doing great. That's not on Xbox, but there's so many that are considering picking up the PlayStation or buying it on PC just to experience in that. So bringing over Final Fantasy 14 and MMO, I don't see why it wouldn't be embraced.
I dig it. Final Fantasy has always been good. So Stalker's the next one. Stalker, original trilogy. I've never played a Stalker game, so watching, you know, this particular title or titles during the Xbox partner preview, I thought it was really interesting. What'd you think? What was your take on Stalker?
That was the one first person I couldn't actually watch. So it's cool that's coming out with this trilogy, but it's also a series that I cannot play. Not because it's a bad game or anything, that just simply because it's first person. So I sadly cannot experience it. But it's kind of cool that they're coming out with the whole, you know, Legends of the Zone trilogy that has these three games included in it. I think that's kind of cool. And that they kind of just built it up for it to really work smoothly on console.
100%. Monster Jam Showdown?
I would personally buy it myself. I'm not against Monster Truck Showdowns or race car things, but that if I had, you know, 7, 8, 9, maybe 10-year-old kid to play with, yeah, it'd definitely be one of those titles that I would buy if my son was younger. My son's not younger. He likes the realistic simulation racers. But I take it for what it is. I mean, it looks like a fun little game. It looked nice. It's just not for me.
Not for you. What else we have? Persona. Okay, definitely looks absolutely amazing. Thoughts on that?
I don't know what it is about the Persona series that I find so intimidating to get into. Like, I want to play it. I really do.
You should.
I don't know where to start. They keep coming up with these reloaded, and I'm like, is it a remake? Is it a retelling? Is it? And they have so many of them, and I feel like every year there's something Persona, but like the numbers jump around, and I don't know what I'm going to do.
Not the numbers jumping around.
Yeah, I need to Google or have somebody sit with me and just draw it out. Where do I start? And what flow does this universe go in? Because it looks like a fantastic game. It looks like a great story. It always looks so interesting. I just find it so intimidating.
So I have 5, and that was my entry to Persona, and it is absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. So 5 is if you want to check it out, I think you'd like the vibe for 5 for sure. So that's where I started.
I have a friend, Sly, who I should probably ask him. We haven't talked in a little bit, but he loves the series and he's always playing it. I've seen him play. That's why it looks so interesting, but it just bounces around so much. I think I have 4.
Yeah,
one of the 4s.
check it out. Now, I don't know. So I have it for PlayStation. I don't know if that series is on PC. I'd have to check. But 5 is, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed 5. Yeah. So Persona is definitely, you know, 2 thumbs up. The first, Berserker Kazan. What'd you think of that?
Look good.
Yeah.
So, yes, I am very, nothing makes me more mad than a Dark Souls-y type of game. Some of them is worth being mad about it, like Nioh. But yeah, the first Berserker Kazan looks really good. Like, it had the Dark Souls-y vibe to it, but it also felt a little bit more faster pace.
Okay, I can see that.
Than that. Like yeah, it looked like it had some timing things in there, but it was, like, super quick. But it was very gory, and I really dug that.
Yeah, no, it was really good. I was actually surprised by that. And do you think it has some JRPG inspirations in there?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah? Yeah, I did see that, too. I did see that, too. So next one we have is Tales of Kinzera Zao. What'd you think of that one?
Well, I'm glad that they showed more footage of it and gameplay. So this one I know was very much recently announced. I believe it was at the Game Awards, so in December. And I really liked the storytelling of it and how he kind of announced the game and the way it was created and the storytelling behind it was I'm trying to get his name. Abu. I feel so bad. I'm not trying to be disrespectful about this name. Abubakar Salim. He was the original voice actor for Bayek, I think, in Assassin's Creed Origin. So he's the creative director and he's the one who's coming up the storyline. So he built this game based off of, you know, the passing and the grief of him coping with his own father's death, which is kind of what the story is telling you in Tales of Kinzera. So I'm not a huge platform type of gamer, only because I'm not very good at it. My timing is always terrible. But
did you like Ori?
Hmm?
Did you like Ori?
Yeah. Yes and no. I didn't play. I don't own it. Wait, I do own it. I didn't play through the whole thing. It's a very beautiful game, but like, I'm just never been super good at platform games. I think it's just PTSD from like Lion King, to be honest.
Okay.
So I don't always naturally gravitate to them, but games like kind of like it's Metroidvania type, but it is kind of, I also consider it a platformer. So like Dead Cells, like I love that game. I eventually got better at it. So seeing Tales of Kinzera has that beautiful, colorful vibe, kind of like Ori does in its own different sense. But I definitely want to play this game more because of the storytelling of it. It's always, for me, I always love a good story. And that's basically what this is about, this man trying to work through his grief of his father. And he has the sun and the moon mask and has different abilities. And you're mastering those. So this is definitely one of those platformers that I'm going to give a try.
You're going to give it a try? Yeah, I was thinking as I was watching it, you know, what game it reminded me of. And definitely Ori. I got some inspirations from Ori when I was watching it. And also Dustin Elysian Tale, even though Dustin Elysian Tale is a hand-drawn game. I think this one isn't that, but it kind of reminded me of, you know, there's just certain games that when they come out, even though that they're a platformer of sorts, they pull you into that world, right? And it's rare that you get games that do that. And I could see myself being pulled into that particular world and universe. Same thing for Ori. Same thing for Dustin, Elysian Tale. So I was really pretty pumped when I was watching, you know, what they showed at the partner preview. So this is really dope.
Yeah, it comes out actually this year, April 23rd, 2024.
Yeah, that one was pretty dope. Frostpunk 2, any thoughts on that? I don't know what to make of that.
Not really. I mean, visually it looked cool, but no.
Yeah, I didn't even know what to make of that. And last but not least, I think this one, I was actually surprised. So the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, cool. Second time, I guess, and I was like, this is really cool. Okay, so what do you think of Kunitsugami, Path of the Goddess?
Well, it's a little bit of correction. Not last, but not least, we did miss out one game that we're going to have to come back to.
Okay.
But Kunitsugami, Path of the Goddess. So initially, I think it was the first 30 seconds of it. I thought it was way too colorful. Like, Tales of Kinzera was very bright, very colorful, but it was done in such a, like you could take it in very easily. The first, like, 30 seconds or so of Kunitsugami was too visually overwhelming. There were so many colors going around everywhere. I couldn't make out really what was happening until they kind of slowed it down and started, you know, showcasing about what is this path that you're going on? What are you doing? Cleaning out, cleansing, helping villagers, giving them tasks to during the daytime. So it's like there's a day night, you know, balance
cycle type.
Yeah, what you're trying to do. And I'm like, okay, I get it now. Like, now that you slowed it down. And even after just being able to tell what you're doing, what your task is, what the gameplay is going to be like, then I could take in, like, all right, this is actually really cool. I like this whole thing. You're guiding this maiden, this goddess, through this village, which I take as, like, you're trying, like, they look dilapidated. They look like they're just, you know, struggling. And you're helping to cleanse it. You're helping to help them rebuild before nighttime comes. And, like, these villagers that you help, that's going to come and assist you with these nighttime battles against these demons that are coming through the shrines to help further cleanse it out. And you have this maiden goddess that is there to assist with it. It had beautiful movements to her about how she's blessing, cleansing, all of that stuff. So once I slowed it down to then, and I could take that in, I'm like, all right, I'm a wish list this game.
Yeah, this looks really dope. This looks really dope. Even like towards the end when they were doing like the dancing or celebration, I'm not sure how you want to categorize that, but I thought that was really dope. I do agree with you. In the beginning, I was trying to make sense of, you know, what was happening. Were you fighting? Were you just parrying? I didn't understand what was happening at first until they started labeling exactly what took place. I like the fact that you could take the soldiers, I guess once they become soldiers and you're, you know, your movement, then you can actually place them in certain sections as you prepare for nighttime to fight. I thought that was really dope. A lot to look forward to. I think this one, you know, this one is definitely going to be on the list for sure. I like this one.
I did too. And it's funny because I think the last like big monster that they show in that fight was like this giant centipede. Man, living in Hawaii, we have so many centipedes, and all I do is I kill that thing with fire. I am so happy I've never burned down my house, but...
Just taking out centipedes?
I don't mess with centipedes. I don't mess with king spiders. That thing is getting WD-40 to the face and being lit on fire. That's what happens with my household. And then after that, I still chop it up with a knife. I don't mess with it. So they ended up with that. I'm like, oh, hell no. No, no.
That's intense. That's definitely intense. But no, that was good. That was good.
And then Kunitsugami.
The last game, which is actually the thumbnail, right? Go figure, yes. Right? How do we forget that, right? Sleight of hand. Thoughts on that?
I liked it. I like that type of style and that look of a game. It didn't have any gameplay footage, so I really want to see what that looks like. But it does say it's like a third-person stealth strategy game, which to me, the first thing I think of is like serial cleaners. Which is very much a stealth game. But the way that she's using these cards, Miss Lady Luck over there, to navigate, find out what this bottle is, which I believe the bottle... It just escaped my mind about when she pulled the label back.
It's that nostalgia. Nostalgia.
There you go. And I'm like, well, that's very interesting about why that would be labeled in there, and yet alone be labeled red, like it's poison, but it's nostalgia. Yeah, I think that looks kind of good. I can't jump on it too soon because we don't have any gameplay footage of it, just this little cinematic little trailer that they're showing. But I'm always down for a stealth strategy game, especially when it's something that's like card-based. But I can't say it's exactly card-based. So, yes, she was using cards, but then, you know, I'm thinking of like Card Shark or something like that. I'm not too sure. But it is something because of these curiosities and these questions that... it piqued my interest.
No, that one is definitely cool. I like the card system. You know, I definitely want to see if that card system is going to be its own thing. Because, you know, whenever they introduce a card game, if you want to call it that, in a game, those things become its own product in the future. So I'm curious to see what they're going to do with that. Or is it just going to remain in the game itself, you know, for her abilities? So I thought that was really interesting for me. Stealth. You know, we can go back all the way to Hideo Kojima, right? Introducing that system that we still see in games today that people are still putting in their titles. So I think that's really dope. The color palette, I think, is amazing, and the graphics are pretty dope. And I do agree with you that jumping too soon because we didn't see any gameplay, you know, I just don't want it to be an experience where we see a game, we see, like, the graphics and the video, and there's no gameplay, and then it does bad. We've seen that happen very recently where a game shows amazing CGI, and then when we get to the game is barely playable, even though, you see, I wasn't going to say it, but that didn't work out too good. So we have to see, you know, what's going to happen with this particular title. So Sleight of Hand, definitely excited for that. And yeah, just a few stood out for me. Sleight of Hand, Unknown 9 Awakening stood out. Persona stood out for sure. Alters, Kunitsugami. So there was quite a few that stood out for me in the list of things. So yeah, that was kind of interesting. I entered the Matrix at the end. How am I? Am I okay right now?
Yeah, okay right now.
Yeah, so it's exciting stuff. I think it was really dope. Overall, I mean, we don't necessarily grade, but what did you think of the experience?
I liked it more than I want to say about half of the games I liked and I'm interested in, and I'm pretty happy to see more of. So I'm not disappointed about it. I mean, I think of at least half of the games I liked. It's a good showing. I don't feel like I wasted my time, but at the same time, it was only like 29-30 minutes long.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, no, it was really good. I really enjoyed it. Next thing that we have, tributes to Dragon Ball creator Akira Toriyama. Daniela, what are your thoughts and takes on this? Memories.
Akira Toriyama, I think he had a huge impact on many generations especially on our generation, in creating Dragon Ball and teaching us so much things and giving us something to look forward to in the afternoons on Toonami. I don't think it's ever an easy thing to lose such a huge, impactful creator that we never ever, like most people never get to meet him, but had such an impact on our life. And just to lose that, and, you know, he was also part of a few, you know, character developments for, you know, some games for like Blue Dragon, which if you've never played Blue Dragon, came out on the 360, it was a fantastic game. To having, you know, the Dragon Ball manga that I don't know anybody who doesn't know Dragon Ball at all in some capacity, or have fallen in love with it or entered into it and found a story that they can relate to or enjoy. So it's never an easy thing to lose somebody who created a world that you fell in love with. And for so long, like I remember watching, I was a little bit late to the game of watching Dragon Ball. And by late, I mean like I started watching it when I was 14, I believe it was. And, you know, when I had my son and he was old enough, I started watching Dragon Ball Z with him and introduced him to Z. And, you know, it's like the series isn't going to go anywhere. It just hurts to not have him there to be a part of it still.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's like, you know, when you grow up with, you know, voice actors or creators that influence your entire childhood, it's kind of tough to see them. And then around this time, you know, when they're transitioning, you find out that they were a certain age, and some of them, you know, pass away and transition very young, you know. And we look at some of the ages that we see of recent individuals who have passed the last couple of years, are like, I didn't realize they were, you know, that young. So I think that I do agree when it comes to, you know, whoever it may be, whether it's a person, you know, a team, a voice actor, you know, specifically that has, you know, whenever you hear a character, you only hear that voice, right? You know, like Batman. There's only one person I think about when I think about Batman when it comes to like the animated series and things of that nature. So it's really interesting to just experience that, but we're always going to have the memories. And for that, you know, I'm grateful for that.
Always grateful. And just to see like across the board on all the socials, like, how many people that have taken it, you know, to heart and, you know, paying their respects, even fellow creators. That's just it's never an easy thing. And, you know, I have no doubts that when the time comes for people, the time comes. But like Mark Hamill, anything happens to him, I don't, you know, the internet will fall apart as well too. So the same thing goes even for mangas and anime. So yeah, having Akira Toriyama pass is going to be a hard thing, and I'm sure every day or every year on his passing there's going to be a huge celebration for it. There's going to be something that happens for it. And you know, even though he's not on this realm with us anymore, I look forward to those events that people will probably and most likely put together to pay their respects.
100%. So next thing that we have here is former Xbox boss believes serious questions are being asked about the future of consoles. And we've talked about consoles from different angles in the last couple of weeks. I definitely want to hear your thoughts first, and I'll share mine after.
I think that's a really good question to be asking now about the future of consoles, because both Xbox and PlayStation are kind of like in the middle of their current life cycle for this generation. The article does mention about like looking into, you know, cloud gaming. I don't know if I'm a fan of that. Yes, it has its use, its functions, and I'm not saying it's bad, but it so heavily relies on internet that I'm not too sure I can be sold about it at all. Like, I don't know. But at the same time, it is something to consider. We have such massive, we brought this up the last time, trying not to bring it up this time, but in the article it also brings up, you have all of these layoffs that are happening. How are we supporting this physical product now? Like, do you have the staffing? Do you have the funding? What does that look like financially to be able to put this together for this next generation? So that is definitely a very good question. I can't even fathom about what it could possibly be. Do I think they're going to go for more portable things? Yeah. So I think they're going to have two different versions. One that is, you know, the higher end of the scale versus the lower end, the more affordable one. I think they're going to, I think for cost wise, they're going to stick with one, maybe. And then maybe through the half life cycle of it, then they introduce something else. But I think if we're looking at the economy, we're looking at where people are spending their money. It makes sense to have two versions, but at the same time, it doesn't. Because you're spending twice as much to create these two different products for a market that you can't really predict accurately well while you're also doing all of these layoffs.
So when it comes to console conversations, I couldn't tell you the last time I turned on a console, right? And I don't know what that means, you know, right now. But when it comes to the future of consoles, as much as they are becoming more PCs every other release, you have to give individuals more options to change the stuff out in the units. I don't remember who started out with the hard drive swaps. I know PS3 had theirs, 360 had theirs, and I don't know when that started where you can actually say, hey, I want more space here, so I'm going to take out this hard drive and add another hard drive. I know Xbox, of course, had that, you know, earlier on, and some individuals use the hard drives for other things, as we know, right? Because we were talking about that recently. But I think that when it comes to, you know, more power, more graphics, more, I mean, at some point, it's not even more anymore, you know? It's just fine-tuning, you know, the experience visually and just giving us, you know, as, you know, ample amount of hard drive space as possible for us to sustain the, you know, 20 gig update downloads, the 100 gig, you know, download of a game. You know, we need a way to continue sustaining that. And then over time, as we've seen, the hard drive prices have gone down because there's, we need those things, right? And how else are we going to be able to sustain that? So I think it's going to be interesting to watch that over the next, I would say, 5 years. And the reason I say 5 years is because of the recent conversation that we're having about, you know, how the controllers have matured to having parts that don't break down. So where keyboard and mouse people, you know, they would have, you know, a longer time period with their devices before they start breaking down, while the controller people would have to replace the controllers because of the drifting and the different things that we're talking about recently. And I think there's going to be a fine line between those things where at some point we're not going to keep buying these refreshers of systems, especially if you're in the console world. And I do agree with you. You're going to build one, and this one is going to sustain for a longer period of time past the part where you would get a pro of a console. And I think it's going to be an interesting thing to watch the next couple of years, because people are trying to buy one thing that's going to last them for a very long time. And what does that mean for a keyboard? What does that mean for a mouse, a headset? You know, you're replacing pads, but you're not replacing the headset anymore. You're not replacing the controller. You're just replacing controller parts or swapping out parts. So I think we're at a place now where we just want our stuff to work and we don't have to keep buying it every year. And if we're going to have a solution to that, that's what we're going to have.
See, with you talking about that, I would be totally open to a very, I guess it'd be modular console. So you have your base console there, has whatever, you know, specs it has, but then it's easily swappable for, like, if you want to upgrade. Well, everybody does hard drives, but, like, if you want to upgrade, you know, the speed of the processor, you just kind of, like, pull that out, send it to manufacturer, and you buy whatever your replacement to put it into there. I'm very open to something that is kind of, in a way, kind of like a PC, but in a console where, like, when you upgrade your PC, you don't have to do all of the parts. You don't. You can do it over time, and you just change out your RAM, change out your hard drive, change out your CPU, or change out your, you know, your CPU cooler. And you don't have to do it all one time, because you have, like, your standard, whatever, your ATX case, or and you just buy the parts as you need it, as you want it, or as it needs an upgrade. Yeah, there's some people who will do a whole refresher, but if you start off with a solid build already, you just upgrade as you go along, as needed. I'd be open to something like that for a console, whether it be PlayStation, Xbox, or even both of them. I'd be open to that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you got it.
But like you're mentioning with like controllers. Like, your joysticks are stripping, you just change out the joysticks. Buttons, templates, whatever it may be, you're getting to the point where you can just swap those out.
Yeah, and I think that's where we are, because I do agree, you know, with you, modular console, I see that working. I really do see that working, because I remember when Victrix came out with the Pro BFG, right? And then everyone was talking about the Hall Effect stuff. They never talked about that or even hinted that they were going to do that. So what they ended up doing is they released a Pro BFG for PlayStation, and then they just recently released a Pro BFG for Xbox. And prior to releasing that, they announced that they were going to do Hall Effect replacements for the Pro BFG for PlayStation and the Pro BFG for Xbox, right? So modular, I'm 100%, you know, with how you're thinking about it, that's where we are. And I think that's where we're going to be in the next couple of years. I say 5. Things are happening pretty fast, and we'll see. We'll see where it actually goes from here.
I think 5 is a really good estimate to see, that there's going to be some pretty big changes within that.
Yeah, 100%. So changes, Rooster Teeth.
Really sad.
It's really sad. Beloved creators of Red versus Blue is shutting down after 21 years. A lot of great memories there. It's like we're saying goodbye to a lot of people. We're saying goodbye to a lot of entertainment platforms that have, you know, changed us in so many ways, entertain us, you know, gave us comic relief over the last couple of years. But any thoughts on that?
Yeah, 21 years is a long time for somebody who started it off with like nothing. And that's something to be incredibly proud of. Like you started it off like in your garage. I think it was his garage. And just started making funny videos that people loved. And, you know, you had Red versus Blue there, which I was never a Halo person, but I loved the Red versus Blue series. It was just really funny. It really was. And that and to build this, like, I would say an empire that, you know, you have these bigger conglomerates want to buy and be a part of to help you find your success. That is something to be very proud of, the whole team. But it is really sad that they're part of this whole layoff and shutdown, and to say goodbye to it, because like you also had Ruby that was in there, which is such a great, fantastic series. Like, what can you do? It's,
yeah.
It's another thing to say goodbye to, and I really hope that they and the team find new homes, maybe even create their own, like start their own thing and their own little studio, and still bring that the creativity and humor to their new projects. I really hope that is what happens.
Yeah, I don't think it's the end, right? Whenever we see stuff like this, we usually see splits. We usually see, you know, other individuals and the team, you know, start something new. You might see a different podcast, you know, born out of that, you know, another video platform born out of that, you know, maybe a different scale, more focused on, you know, the video platform of the world. You know, they might put their stuff on YouTube and stuff like that. So I don't think it's the end. It's really to be continued. We didn't think that we would see, you know, a lot of the games that we're playing today, but it's, you know, we're inspired to create, and we're going to continue creating. So yeah, we'll see what goes on. I don't think it's the end either, but we'll move on. So former PlayStation exec calls exclusivity the Achilles heel of blockbuster games. Now, this is an interesting, you know, thought, an interesting play to say something without really saying something. Daniela, what do you think about that?
It is, to a degree. You mean you're exclusive, like their PlayStation's done it, Xbox have done it, but it does, you know, we brought this up before, it does narrow down where their initial market is. Obviously, they're trying to pull whatever to their platforms, but eventually, and usually, it always opens up. It always like, all right, we had our year with us. Let's go to PlayStation, or let's go to Xbox, or let's go to PC, to, you know, bring life, bring more money. But it kind of is a weak point when your initial actual day one is just limited to one or two platforms.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think I like it. I think it's definitely, you can Let me think about this for a second. It's an interesting statement because of where we are, right? We see, keeps coming up, Helldivers is just like, I watched Helldivers recently on stream, and I was just like, you know, it's not too late for me to jump in. Like, I hear people are enjoying it so much, jump in, jump out, you know, take over, you know, the aliens and stuff like that. And then I see, of course, Halo. You wonder if Halo will ever go to another platform outside of the PC or the Xbox. I don't know. That'd be an interesting thing to see if it ever happens. But this conversation essentially is like, hey, you know what? Just bring the stuff out everywhere. We just saw Ghost of Tsushima go on PC, right? That's happening really soon. And I think it's going to continue to happen because the platforms have matured and the games, you know, play really well on, and they always have, you know, for PC. But it's time to put them everywhere that they need to go, especially with the technologies that we have in place, like crossplay and cross save and all the different things that we have at our disposal now. So I think it's a very timely comment from an exec that people respect, right? And I think it's going to see, we're going to see how companies are going to respond to that when they're releasing their games as well. Are they only going to release it on the Xbox platform because of Game Pass and day ones and things of that nature? Are they going to venture off and try to get it everywhere so everyone can enjoy it? Because yes, there's a cost to do those things, but they're also, you're also going to gain revenue if the game is really good. And we see that with Helldivers. So I'll end there.
Yeah, it kind of is super limiting, and it just kind of makes sense to open it up. I don't know. I'm a PC player. We'll just keep playing on PC.
Yeah, we'll just keep playing on PC. I'm definitely with you on that. So now this time,
I have my PS5 and I'll play the exclusive games there, but then, and that's the beauty of it all. Like, I don't feel like I still have not felt compelled to get an Xbox simply because of the Game Pass. And yeah, they have the exclusive games, but I have the Game Pass. So playing it on my PC, which kind of also adds into, you know, the previous topic of, you know, are we going to be putting money into consoles if we have these cloud services, which again, I have multiple different feelings about. But again, I'm, like I said, I'm not compelled to get an Xbox because I have the Game Pass, I have the PC Game Pass. I can play it just fine over there, so it's not a push any marking. But when it comes to exclusivity, nothing is hindering me personally as a gamer because I do subscribe to those things. I can't picture anybody wanting to pay for two subscription services like that, though.
Interesting. We used to do it, and then I heard that, I remember when I was getting ready to switch to PC, I was like, wait, so you mean to tell me you're playing games on the internet and you're not playing to play games on the internet? Because you have the internet and you're paying to play on the internet. That's how it was for, like, what was it, 360 and PlayStation? Yeah. I'm like, so you mean to tell me I'm paying twice? That's it. Like, are you kidding me? I don't want to do that anymore. I'm like, you know what? So if that means leaving just to pay one time, right? Because, you know, we're looking at cost. I'm going to pay once and just play the games. And then a lot of the companies saw that, you know, all those individuals moving like that. And they were like, okay, you can play these games, you know, since you already have internet, you don't have to pay to play and pay again. It was just insane. I was like, no, I'm not doing that anymore. So yeah, we see the shift. It is happening really, really fast. So
we'll see. We shall see. But if we can stop getting the exclusivities here and having your games exclusively here, like, I think that word has lost its allure to it. Because I remember, man, were we like playing old age game here? I remember, like, in the whole console wars, which I'm sure consoles, Microsoft and Xbox love the console wars to a certain degree, not between them, but between their user base, because you had people who were just like team Xbox, team PlayStation, mine is better. And then when you use the words exclusive, yeah, well, mine, I'm going to get Call of Duty this like months before you can actually play it. And then you're going to get it like 3 months later. No, I'm going to kick your ass.
Right. And who benefited from that?
PlayStation and Xbox.
That's right. That's right.
And then, you know, you had those really huge headaches of, like, you want to play certain games. I want to say it was Resident Evil. Like, where all of the skins or all the little special things, depending on what edition you got, it wasn't just like, oh, you get the gold edition, you get everything. No, you get the gold edition on PlayStation, you get this set. Or you can get the gold edition on Xbox and you only get this set. But if you were a massive collector, here you are buying like 3, 4, 5 different copies just so you can have just everything. Because it was exclusive. I think that word definitely has, like, you need to exit the game.
Yeah, it definitely is diluted now. And it's just one of those things where, you know, we just want to play the games where we want to play it, you know, that's where we are. And it's at a place now where we can, for most games, but I think some companies are still trying to get there. What's up, Aaron? Some companies are still trying to get there, but we're at a place now where even when we look at the next topic, right, Titanfall director reportedly making new Titanfall game that's not Titanfall 3, it will make sense to just release them everywhere, right? Release it on PlayStation, release it on Xbox and PC. Of course, crossplay is a given. It's not something that we should be waiting for. Even though it was interesting to see Warframe introduce, I think, crossplay very recently, right? Which was shocking to me. That didn't make sense. But this Titanfall game, as you were, we kind of talked about it briefly. You said that it's, the game is lacking vision now based on how they're talking about it. Can you, like, talk about that a little bit?
So, yeah, the article that we're pulling this from came from Eurogamer, and I don't think the article was poorly written. I think the article itself was written just fine. It was really the quoting from the actual interview or discussion that was had. It does not seem clear at all. Like, we're going to make a new Titanfall game, but we're not going to name it Titanfall 3, where it's going to be something else. But within that universe, and yeah, we totally saw making that Mandalorian game, but we're going to make this other Star Wars game. And yeah, we just want to make a game that is Titanfall, but not Titanfall, within the universe, but not in the universe, and also work on these other projects that fall into another universe, but we canceled out the part of the universe that we were originally in. Like, it's just super weird to me to have, like, all of that in there. It, to me, it comes across as behind the scenes, we don't exactly know what we're doing. We're throwing stuff on the wall, hoping it sticks, and then we can have a direction. That's what is coming out to me. Like, that just seems really weird. And then to also add, like, oh, yeah, we also thought about having the Apex and Titanfall mashup and call it, like, Titanfall Legends. But, well, it's going to be a single-player experience, kind of like Titanfall. But since Apex, the one that was the more popular that took off that more people have, that is a multiplayer, yeah, we're going to ignore that fact. We're just going to pull some characters from it. Like, I don't know what the deciding factor is in that. But, like, if you're going to do a mashup between, like, games, but one is more popular that people like, which had the multiplayer, the PvP in it, and then match it up with a single player, I don't think it is a smart thing to take away the element that made that game popular.
100%.
Maybe it doesn't have to be a PvP, but it should be a co-op, at least a 4-player co-op.
Yeah, so Titanfall can't afford, and I do agree with you, Titanfall can't afford another mishap. Now, this is EA, right? Mm-hmm. And they just let go 900 people. Was that EA?
670. Yeah.
600 plus?
I don't know. It was a lot.
It was a lot of people.
Too many.
Yeah. Then you start wondering how many people were in the messaging department to make sure the messaging that goes out for the game is the right messaging, right?
Yeah.
And I definitely agree. The launch window for Titanfall was really bad. You know, you do not launch, you know, during the Call of Duty timeframe. No one should do that ever, right? If you want to lose money, that's what you do. If you don't want to lose money, right, you do the very opposite. So I think it's interesting that the messaging is a little confusing, right, in a lot of ways. And I'm curious to see if, you know, if it was because they lost the individuals who would make that messaging really good. And that is extremely important. Now, if we don't know what we're buying, we're not going to buy it. So you're already setting up yourself in such a way where, to be fair, kind of just like, you know, do like a quick angle off for a second. To be fair, as you get closer to the conversation on what this game is going to be about, they may do podcasts, they may do panels to clear up the messaging for what you're going to get. You know, launch an actual trailer, maybe give you a demo. We're talking a couple of years out, right? Because they just announced it. So at least 2-3 years out, if that, you know, for something halfway decent that they can show. But messaging is extremely important. So we'll see what they do with that.
For their Titanfall 2.5, they don't want to call it 3.
Yeah, I think you should make it, you know, you should make it a Titanfall game that we want to play. We like the first one. We like the second one. We love the fast pace, you know, of the player versus player. We love the mechs, you know, prepare, you know, for Titanfall, you know, just do what we already love. And I do agree with you. Why change it if it already works? We're not looking for anything new. We're still playing Alan Wake. Okay. We're still playing Call of Duty 10 plus years in. All right. We're playing Contra again with Operation Galuga. We're still playing Turtles. Like, we're playing the same games. We're still playing Mario. We're still playing Sonic. I mean, we go down the list. We're playing the same exact games. We don't want anything new. And if it is new, it needs to spark something or have something of old. And this game that we were talking about earlier today for the Xbox, you know, partner preview, The Alters, you're walking around. It looks like Death Stranding. So we don't want anything new, right? But anyway, so I'm excited because I love Titanfall. I think Titanfall is amazing. It's the best game that most people didn't play because of the launch window that it was launched at, which was extremely bad. So
you got to be a Titan to be able to really overwin that type of launch window. And Titanfall was not that Titan.
Yeah, you're not going to take over Call of Duty like that. It's almost impossible at this point, unless it's Call of Duty coming out, right? And then there you have it. So any other thoughts on that?
No, to me, it just seems like they're throwing ideas on the wall, seeing what sticks and going with it, which seems a little like that's just the impression that I'm getting. They could be further along for that, but because of that, the feeling that I'm getting from it, I think it's too early to be saying anything because it just seems like you have no direction, no clear direction.
Yeah, no clear direction there. So, all right, so move on, and then we'll do final thoughts in a second. But the chapter preview for Flying Monkeys, I released that links in the description below. If you're looking for a book that gives you, I think it's going to be a great unlock for a lot of people when it comes to narcissism and the words that you should know in that world, because it is its own world. So I did a chapter free preview. It is free. So definitely check it out in the description below. And you were able to check it out. Aaron checked it out, I believe, as well. What'd you think?
It's a very easy read. I kind of gave you some of my inputs there. I had some questions and inputs about it, but I liked it. I liked it. It's very easy to read and to understand, and the examples that you gave. It's definitely, I want to read more of it. I want to see what else you have to say.
Yeah, 100%. You're definitely going to get some more sneak peeks. We're well into it now. I think we're at least 50 plus pages in. So just formulating everything to make sure it's actually the way it's supposed to look. Of course, I think I made some adjustments. I think manipulation is going to be a chapter. You know, what does that look like? And then narcissism is definitely going to be a chapter at the beginning. And then how to spot it, even though we do that every single chapter, I'm going to have a specific chapter towards the end on what you should look for and how do you know that you're involved in it. I think those were some of the suggestions that you had. I'm definitely going to make a note on that for sure. But I think it's coming together really, really dope. And then design the cover yet, but I have some ideas for the cover. So we did Xbox Partner Preview. But as far as like the book or the preview, definitely check it out. Links in the description below. That is a chapter preview for that. We talked about the Xbox preview, Titanfall. We talked about Rooster Teeth and a couple of things. Anything that you want to wrap up with before we head out?
Yeah. As always, before the show, you're like, is that all we have to talk about?
Yeah.
We always have a lot to talk about.
We do. But you're good? You're good?
Yeah, I'm good. I am solid. That was a great episode.
I appreciate it. So where can they find you?
They can find me on all the socials at Miss DJM. And Andrew, where can they find you?
You can find me here on YouTube. You can also find Miss DJM. I have your YouTube channel. Links in the description below, so definitely check her out. You can find me at Uriah, U-R-I-Y-Y-A. And appreciate you coming through, Aaron. Always a pleasure. And we'll see you guys next time. Take care.
Bye.